Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. I'm your host, Nick Berlansky, joined as always by Nick Horwat, and as we'll get to over the next 40 to 45 minutes, this might be a new low for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They fall 4-3 on Monday night to the Anaheim Ducks, losing now three of the four games in their season-long four-game homestand, and five of their last six games overall. Horwat, we have plenty to discuss on that game last night, but I think the biggest storyline, hands down, is the goaltender. Tristan Jarry has another rough night, making 23 saves on 27 shots all over the place in his crease. I texted you during the game, and I said, it feels like we're watching the worst versions of Marc-Andre Fleury. He just has no idea where he's at in his own crease, and he's flailing all over the place. The worst part is, at least Fleury made some saves when he did that. Tristan Jarry allowed goals when he got, you know, out of pocket and out of schedule, and it did not look good for Tristan Jarry last night. You could say that he lost them, the Pittsburgh Penguins, that game. You could say that Erik Karlsson lost the Pittsburgh Penguins that game, but that's what we're going to discuss here over the next couple of minutes. What did you think of Jarry's performance, not just last night, but over the last two games? Because he got pulled on Saturday night as well.
Got pulled. Yeah, that's right. He got pulled. I forgot he got pulled until I was doing game recaps because I was looking into the numbers. The Penguins put up 47, 42 shots last night. Let me pull that paper back out. 42 shots last night. And just trying to figure, that's like, you know, 40-something. They had 42 last night, 40-something the other night. Against the Ottawa Senators, and yet Jarry has not been making the saves, has not been in the zone. We were, I think the two of us were perfectly fine with the Tristan Jarry contract heading into the season, because who else free agent-wise were you going to get? Because as we see, and as one of them, you know, ended up signing a new deal, those goalies that were on the market are not on the market. And as a matter of fact, one of them, the big one, signed a nice long extension to stay where he said he didn't want to stay. Conversation that should have been had months ago, but we don't even need to have it anymore. But yeah, this isn't good from Jarry. I think we all came into the season thinking, yeah, his skill is fine. His skill is perfectly fine. We know he can be a top goalie in the league. The expectations are going to be high. But I think we're yet to see that. And when it comes to last night, that was a struggle. That was a struggle, especially considering he needed Brian Rust to bail him out for a couple of, for that one chance there where he was just hot-dogging out of the net. You know, luckily he didn't get scored on that one, but the first one he did, and I don't know what happened on that first one. Whenever I saw it live happen, I thought to myself, did he have to dive for that? Could he have just stayed in position? Looking at the replay, maybe he got caught on something. I don't know. I'm not a goalie coach or anything like that, but he just seemed like a wild man between his pipes, and it's not at all what you need from your starting goalie that you've put your faith into. He's proven that he can do it. He looked really good against Colorado. If you want to take it back that far, looked really good against Washington. But every other game he's been in, it hasn't been there. And Chicago wasn't terrible either. But the Penguins need saves. They need the timely saves. And boy, oh boy, did they not get it last night, especially at the most timely of times in those closing seconds.
Yeah, he's now allowed three or more goals in five of his seven starts to start the season. Not a good start for Tristan Jarry on that brand new five-year contract with $5-plus million, a modified no-trade clause. A quick sidebar to bring up, based on what you said, is, you know, you're not a goalie coach, so you can't really tell if, you know, that would have been what the goalie coach would want him to do. Hey, just lay it all out there. I thought he could have pushed from left to right in that instance. I thought he had the time to do it. But that brings up an interesting sidebar is, you know, we don't see in the NHL assistant coaches get made available. And I feel like, yes, you heard Mike Sullivan yesterday say, you know, about Tristan Jarry playing deeper in his crease when he's not as confident in his game. He said that's something that you'd have to ask, you know, Andy Kyoto, our goaltender coach, about. Why don't they make them available to the media? Like, Andy Kyoto's the goaltending coach. I'm sure a lot of people would like to ask Todd Reirden some questions pertaining to the power play. So it's just an interesting thing that, you know, the NFL does. And I know the NFL does a lot of things in a different way because of how big that sport is and how laser focused a lot of their fan base is. But I feel like a lot of the fans of the Pittsburgh Penguins and a lot of the media members would also appreciate getting to talk to some of these assistant coaches a little bit more often about things that they're specifically in charge of. The goaltending coach, talk about Tristan Jarry's game. The power play coach, talk about the power play that was 10% coming into this one. I just feel like that's something that never caught my attention until Sullivan's quote yesterday matched with what you said here today about, well, you know, I'm not a goaltender coach. And it's like, yeah, wouldn't it be nice to ask Andy Kyoto, like, what's going on there? Like, why is he seemingly, like, a little bit more frazzled this year than he has been in recent years? So I don't know. I think that would be interesting.
That really would be. I think, I don't know how a lot of it works. I'm still only my second year at this, specifically. So I don't know how a bunch of it works. I think you have to, like, punch in requests for that sort of thing. Like, even in a press conference setting. I remember last year, just randomly, we had Todd Reirden once.
I think it was post-game, I remember, because Sullivan was unavailable, so Reirden came out.
It was after a practice, from what I remember.
Okay.
Just randomly, we had Todd Reirden once. I think Mike Sullivan is the other thing too. Is Mike Sullivan's usually really good about answering questions that might not fully pertain to him specifically. I mean, like, we'll ask a bunch of power play questions, we'll ask a bunch of goaltending questions, and he's pretty good about answering because he is the head coach and does, you know, oversee and manage it all. But getting down to the nitty-gritty, like the way he did say, that's a question for Andy Kyoto. You're right. I think it would be, and you're right, the NFL does just handle things differently. Because I was thinking, too, like, well, the NFL does this, but they are also much more of a, I don't know, different monster when it comes to this sort of thing. That they'll make their assistant coaches available. They'll make their officials available, which, again, could really use that. No, the NHL won't, though, because the NHL...
No, the NFL doesn't make their officials available.
I thought they don't have
to,
literally...
They don't... No, they don't have to account for their actions.
They didn't just do it the other day with the...
No.
Steelers stand. I could swear I thought I saw a tweet. I'll look into it in a minute. But... the people would get made available, I think, because the NHL likes protecting their guys.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is, and maybe that's part of it. But also, like I said, Mike Sullivan's usually really good at it. So maybe we also just haven't noticed, because, again, he is really good. This is one of the first few... you'll get... That's more of a question for Kyle, or, you know, or Hexy. You'll get that a lot. You know, him not knowing the GM situation. That's understandable.
Yeah.
But he's usually pretty good about knowing the coach's stuff.
Yeah. He knows what's going on with his team, and he usually answers to the fullest, but it's just something different about talking to the guy that's specifically focused on just that, and he might have a different perspective. That's the only reason I mentioned that. But let's get back to Tristan Jarry, the main topic of the main source of this topic here. What do they do with him at this point? Because, you know, he hasn't looked good through most of his starts. It's weird because the starts that he has looked good in, he's shut out the opponents, including the Colorado Avalanche. So what do you do at this point? Because you just signed this guy, what, 2 months ago to a five-year contract with $5 million, and he has a 12-team no-trade list. So what do you do at this point with Tristan Jarry nine games into the season when it's already looking like this isn't good and he should be healthy. Like, health shouldn't be a factor here. He shouldn't be dealing with that injury. He said that he was completely healthy going into camp, so unless he re-aggravated something, it doesn't seem like it's a health issue. So what is the issue? We don't know. But what do you do if it pertains and persists where Tristan Jarry plays at this poorly?
Dude, I don't know. I do not know. You hope Alex Nedeljkovic can find a pot of gold?
It's a lot of hope. It is a lot of hope. And here is the reason why they brought in Alex Nedeljkovic. I mean, you hope that when he comes back, he's able to handle the starts 50-50 until Tristan Jarry becomes the $5 million goaltender you're paying him to be. But if that day never comes this season, you're in a really bad situation because you're not going to want to buy out the remaining 4 years of that contract. That's going to cost you and handcuff you for a long time. So what do you do at that point? I mean, not to mention, you know, the 12-team no trade list makes everything harder as well. You only have 19 teams that you could potentially even look at. It's just a move that right now, prisoner of the moment, looks like it could be an anchor for the Pittsburgh Penguins if Tristan Jarry does not turn it around significantly in the coming weeks.
It's going to be tough. Like, I genuinely don't know how to quantify anything that he's done so far. Like, what's that? Two shutouts. Great. Other than that, he's giving up like 5 goals a game.
Yeah.
This is so far from ideal. And again, it's the timely goals, too. It's the breakaway in the literal closing seconds. Your team is shorthanded. Maybe they should have capitalized on the 5-on-3 already, sure. But, man, you got to make that one. Or how about not losing your net? How about not losing your positioning? There's all kind of little things that are going to go into this. What doesn't make this any easier to talk about is that goaltending is voodoo, and we could come back from the California road trip going, Tristan Jarry had a perfect road trip. He let in 2 goals the entire time just because that's the way goalies are. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's kind of really hard for me to come up with anything. And I know saying, I don't know, isn't a great answer. But truthfully, I don't know might be the only answer we have here because everything could change on the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. That being said, though, it doesn't feel like it, right? We're starting to get a lot of the feelings that we had last year. I know you asked me before, how does the feeling in the room? It's starting to feel like it did last year all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, it's starting to feel like the 22-23 season is still here. There was a lot of early hope. There was a lot of early feeling out process with the new faces. That excuse is out the door come tomorrow. Because I think once November hits, that whole, we have new guys, it's a feeling out process. Sullivan used the words feeling out process. It may have been yesterday morning. It may have been a couple of days ago. I don't remember exactly.
He said it yesterday talking about the power play with Riley Smith going out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, that is gone, though. Come tomorrow when it comes to new faces in this lineup and a feeling out process. Gone. Your excuses is out of here because you've had all of training camp, preseason, most of preseason, considering you take guys in and out of the lineup, and then soon to be 10 games. This is where we should start to see what kind of team we have. And it's not pretty so far. We're still yet to get a point from the bottom line. The third line's looked a hell of a lot better since Radim Zahorna got here. Mm-hmm. You cannot fault the first line for any of this. Maybe their finishing ability is down a little bit. Sidney Crosby did have a career high 12 shots against the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. Leave that as it is. And Jake Guentzel played 24 minutes last night.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of this team anymore. Welcome to the Ron Hextall, Kyle Dubas era.
Yeah. Here's the worst part I think about last night is all those guys that you mentioned played well.
Yep.
And I talked about this on the Iceberg Recap show last night. All 18 skaters had good games. I couldn't find a single player that I looked at and I said, his overall game was poor last night. They all had good games. Yes, did some of them make mistakes that they'd like to take back? I'm sure Erik Karlsson would 100% say yes on that pass with about 20 seconds to go and on the man advantage that sprung Mason McTavish. But the one player that didn't perform, and it seems like it's been like this for a couple of games this year, is Tristan Jarry. And that's scary because he's the one that holds the most weight in the conversation about whether or not you win or lose the game. Because on all four of those goals, it was an opportunity for him to make the timely save to keep the momentum in the Penguins' favor. And he just didn't do it. And that's something that you can say, well, you know, he struggled a little bit, but if he goes and turns around, like you mentioned, at California road trip, hey, that's good. We might be talking a different tune. Here's the problem. He hasn't made the timely save at all over the past 2.5 seasons. That's the one issue that's always been hampering him. That's the bad habit that he has. And if you can't make the timely save, how in the heck are you going to make it through a Stanley Cup run, which is what this team's ultimate goal is? You're not. So Tristan Jarry needs to not just perform the way he used to perform. He needs to break out of some bad habits, which is one, being able to make the timely save. First and foremost, he needs to be able to come out and make the save when the team needs it. Because if you look at the opportunities for the Anaheim Ducks, they were few and far between yesterday. But it seemed like every time they got a singular opportunity, Tristan Jarry let one in. That power play goal, it was one-on-one, man-on-man, and Tristan Jarry got beat. Mm-hmm. On the breakaway, it was one-on-one, man-on-man, and I get it. It's a breakaway from center ice, and Mason McTavish is a really good young player, but you got beat. You can't get beat every single time. If it was that happened, but you know he was great the rest of the game, and there were a bunch of tap-ins like it was in St. Louis, it's like, okay, I mean, that's unfortunate. You lost that one opportunity you had to change the course of the game, but every single time they scored, Tristan Jarry had a chance to change the course of the game, and he didn't. And that's a habit that's going to be worrisome going forward.
Yeah, that last one, I've never felt the air get sucked out of everything so quickly. Just because of, all right, it's a 5-on-3 opportunity. They'll have most of the 2 minutes for that 5-on-3. It is this vaunted power play that we heard so much about coming into the season. It's Erik Karlsson, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jake Guentzel, when he's healthy, guess what? He's healthy. Maybe Chris Letang is out there. He's not, but well, we'll take it. And not only that, but the power play scored a couple times already in the game. And one of them was a 5-on-3 already. Okay, so you're in your mind, you're looking at it going, hey, you know what? There's really something that could happen here in this late game, because you see the clock ticking down, this late game moment. We're going to ignore the fact that it's the Ducks. We're just going to say it's a really hard-fought game, and they're going to find a way to win this. And literally in the closing seconds, okay, the first power play is ending, fine. You have time to record on the second. Maybe you take it into overtime to get your pity point, because we're yet to even get one of those. And then 3-on-3 overtime with this team, because we're yet to see that even. 3-on-3 overtime with Sidney Crosby, probably with Jake Guentzel, and maybe with Erik Karlsson. Chris Letang out there with Malkin and maybe Riley Smith, maybe Brian Rust. You start to really get the fun factor into your head. You know, you're thinking of the other side too. Like, all right, well, there's Trevor Zegras. There is how good Mason McTavish is being. Troy Terry. There's all kind of skill on that side of the lineup too. And then just one quick bad Aaron pass. And your goalie can't make the stop in the literal closing seconds. Because then you look at the clock and you go, there's what, 5 seconds left? Well, this stinks. Time to pack it in, I guess. Yeah. I had to pretty much delete every question I had for the team because, oh boy, I didn't know what to come up with after that.
Yeah, it's a game and it's a loss that I couldn't help but laugh. It was humorous to me at the end of that one.
Oh, the entire media room was laughing so hard. Like, they couldn't help it.
Like, you found a way to lose that. No way, shape, or form. In a tie game with 2 minutes and 8 seconds left and you're getting a 5-on-3, should you come away with 0 points in the standings in that? And they found a way to do it. So a lot of that is due to the goaltender, which we've talked about extensively, but you know they've got a lot of other things that they need to address moving forward as the calendar flips to November. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about that new look power play. You mentioned it very briefly there. Let's dive into it a little bit deeper in the second segment here. We'll be right back.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. Penguins, they lost last night 4-3, but a lot of people online were upset about the power play after this game. And yes, the one mistake by Erik Karlsson cost the Pittsburgh Penguins the game at the end, making that pass to Evgeny Malkin, a pass that they make seemingly 30 to 40 times on every power play opportunity, was read by Adam Henrique of the Anaheim Ducks penalty kill, and he sends Mason McTavish in on the breakaway, who gets the game winner, his second goal of the game, third point of the game, and the Penguins lose their second straight game and their fifth in their last six outings. But a lot of people upset about the power play's performance in general, and coming into this game, I was as well. They were 10% at that point, 2-for-20, and hadn't scored since October 13th against the Washington Capitals. Last night, they go 2-for-7, which is good for 28.6% if you do that throughout an entire season. That's good, Horwat. So I don't understand where the vitriol is for the power play. What did you think last night of their performance?
It was definitely better. I can see why people still aren't upset, or are still upset with it, because you have to remember, a lot of people are the "what have you done for me lately" people. And what has the power play done for us lately? Well, they gave up a shorthanded break that cost them the game. I think we've seen Erik Karlsson make that specific pass 1,000 times. We've seen Erik Karlsson just make unreal passes all season so far. He's not going to hit those passes 100% of the time. That's part of it too. It's just the way it is. I can understand how people are still upset with the power play, because, well, let's be honest, you have a 5-on-3 opportunity. Maybe you should have scored while it was 5-on-3 and not 5-on-4 with the man in the middle breaking out of the box. Maybe smarter decision making needed to be had in that area. I think Evgeny Malkin took a little blame as well for the power play not scoring at the end there. They just kept finding Dostal's glove and chest. I don't know how else to put it. I think the power play looked to be a little bit better, a little bit smarter. They were shooting the puck more, which genuinely has been the killer through the early parts of the season. Overall, though, I think if they can keep progressing like this, there won't be too much to worry about. But they got to find the finishing. And like I kind of slightly mentioned before, this team, Mike Sullivan said it, and he is right. The Penguins did look like the better team last night.
Yeah.
For a majority of the game, you're rifling off 42 shots. For the second game in a row, it's over 40. You do look like the better team. Look at that deserve to win a meter that we are undefeated with this year.
The only time I think that they lost the deserve to win a meter was the 4-0 win over the Colorado Avalanche.
Raise the deserve to win banner. And he's like, Mike Sullivan isn't totally wrong when he says that the Penguins looked like the better team and the outcome doesn't reflect that. Well, then something's got to start reflecting the outcome, because at this point, it's coming down to the finishing ability, right?
Well, and here's the thing. Deserving to win a game doesn't get you into the postseason, Mike. And I'm tired of hearing that excuse. I mean, it's not an excuse. It's what he's saying. It's what he saw. It's his observation of the game. Fine. But your observation of the game should also be you lost again. Like, you lost again. I don't care if you deserve to win. You didn't win. So something has to change. You can't say, well, I mean, we deserve to win. We outplayed them. So what we're doing is working. It's not working. And last night it was because of your goaltender. But in other games this season, it's been because, and we'll talk about it here, it's been because your team doesn't know how to finish opportunities. And you saw that at some points last night, and that goes towards the power play as well. They need to be better at finishing opportunities.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, and their finishing ability just hasn't been there. That huge save from John Gibson at the end of the first period. You know, if that gets tapped in, who knows where the rest of the game goes.
Yeah, that one's puck luck, but more often than not, that's not the case. That
exactly.
Somebody makes a ridiculous save, or that they get that bad of puck luck. Like, to say that that's happened over 9 games just shows that you're blindly hoping and you're toting a company line. So I've seen a couple people on the internet be like, people always say, well, they need to be better at finishing. These are the chances that they're not finishing. Like, right? Really? Like, really? Like, come on. That's the exception and not the rule. Get your head out of your butt. That's not the problem. Like, there is a problem here. Stop trying to ignore it.
It's just there's something here. It's just they're not finishing. There are moments. There have definitely been moments, and there have definitely been games where the Penguins looked like the better team. But that finishing ability is not there. And Mike Sullivan is discouraged. He did say that. He is discouraged by this loss, considering the fact that they were the better team. Are changes coming? He kind of hinted at it. We'll see where it goes. I think everyone's kind of rolling their eyes at this point when it comes to the change thing. But I think there, who knows what it's going to be? Who knows what you can change right now? I think, for what it's worth, Mike Sullivan is a little less handicapped this time around because he has some more fluid communication with Kyle Dubas where, hey, let's try and change up the mojo a little. Let's do this, 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 and this, and then have actual conversations about it. There might be something a little different here, and the change has to be, I'm sure we'll talk about it, the change has to be something more than just a call-up, and the change also has to be more than just saying the power play needs to shoot more, or we're going to switch out Ricardo Kell for Brian Rust, scratch that, Brian Rust for Riley Smith, scratch that, who's next?
Yeah, eventually you're just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
To bring this back around to the power play, I know we went off on a tangent about the greater scheme of things there, but I mean that's what's going
to
happen after
Welcome
a loss like last night.
Welcome to the state of this October. Like it's
yeah, honestly, that's how this month has gone for the Pittsburgh Penguins to open up this season. But I think that the power play is moving in the right direction, and I think if you're trying to get on them about last night and their performance, 28.6% is going to give you a top five power play, which is exactly what you wanted. So you know what? Their performance was fine last night. And more importantly than the two goals that they scored, I look back at their third power play opportunity, and I think that's the best one of the night. No, they didn't score. They built momentum. They got shots on goal. They actually forced Lucas Dostal to make some really impressive saves. And what did that do for the team? Instead of losing momentum, like we've seen throughout a lot of the season where they get on the power play, they lose the momentum, and it starts to shift in the other team's favor, the Penguins had 6, 7, 8 shifts in a row after the power play where they just completely hemmed the Ducks into their own zone. They were pushing the pace. They were getting their opportunities. They were getting closer and closer to getting that lead back at 1-1, and then you take a penalty. And then what happens there? Okay, you know what? You took a penalty. Let's kill it and get back on the attack. Well, the second shot of that power play goes behind Tristan Jarry. He gets beat 1-on-1, and now the bubble is completely deflated. And it took getting a 5-on-3 at the end of the second period to blow that balloon back up. This team continues to build momentum and leads it up to absolutely nothing, right? You build the momentum to a point. You build all of it to a climax, and then just a disappointing end to all of it. It's what this team has done all season long. Yes, you can say that they outplayed their opponent for 50 out of the 60 minutes, but guess what? You still lost. And at the end of the day, I don't really care how badly you outplayed somebody if you still lost, and this is a thing that happens night in and night out. But as far as the power play is concerned, I liked Riley Smith's puck retrieval in the first period on the power play. That directly led to the Erik Karlsson goal. I thought that he did a good job getting down low, getting the puck on the rebound, and starting that cycle again. I liked that they had 9 shots through the first 3 power play opportunities. I thought that they looked really good in the first 3 power play opportunities, obviously scoring on one of them, and then they get the 5-on-3 or the dueling 5-on-3s at the end of the second and third periods that, again, looked pretty good, all things considered. Now, you do have that mistake by Karlsson, but that's a mistake. The one thing that bothers me about this power play, and it's not just the power play, it's the Penguins at 5-on-5 as well. I need to see better screens in front. It's not about scoring in front of the net all the time, especially if they're committed to taking all of these shots from 35 feet away. If Malkin's taking that shot from the point, if Karlsson's taking that shot from the point, and another factor in this is the Penguins probably lead the NHL in shots into shin pads this year because they just continue to shoot the puck right into the shin pads of the opponent. But when they do get through, you saw it last night. Lucas Dostal looked like he was playing in warmups. There was nobody in front of him. It was glove save, glove save, glove save. It looked boring for him. You have nobody in front of the net, and you can say, well, Gensel's in front of the net, and then as soon as they shoot the puck, he moves to the side and tries to deflect the puck. How many times has he deflected the puck? How many times has he deflected the puck this season? How many times has Sidney Crosby deflected the puck this season? Look at Joe Pavelski and what he does. He stands in front of the net and he doesn't leave the front of the net. What did Patrick Hornqvist do when he was on the Penguins power play? He stood in front of the net, and he doesn't leave in front of the net. He stands there, and he moves his stick to deflect the puck, and he gets out of the way with lifting his leg or by moving a little bit. But you know what he always is? In front of the goaltender. The Penguins, I don't know if they're afraid to get hit by the puck. I don't know if they're coached that way. It's something I'd like to ask Todd Reirden. Stand in front of the net, because if you don't, goaltenders in this league, except Tristan Jarry, will make that save every time.
Oh, damn. the state of this team, man. You get into the little things, and it's the little things that aren't working for him.
And that's the difference between finishing and not finishing this league. It's microscopic, but it's something like that where you're taking all these shots from the point, and you can say, hey, puck retrieval, you set it up. Evgeny Malkin one-timer, Eric Karlsson one-timer, Crosby comes up and gets a shot from the point. If you're committed to making those shots, then your net front presence has to actually be a net front presence and not just stand to the left of Dostal and put your stick on his left pad as he makes the glove save.
Yeah, it's finding the finishing ability. Don't know how else to put it. They're getting their opportunities, and they're capitalizing on a couple here and there. We saw the Evgeny Malkin 5-on-3. Thing about 5-on-3 is I always feel it's different from a regular power play just because you have that much more ice. You have that much more of a chance. It kind of counts as... It is a full goal. It is a full tack onto your power play percentage, but it always feels like it was just a half. Like, you should have done that. It's what makes the missed 5-on-3 at the end even worse, because it's double all of a sudden. But that, you know, that goal from Eric Karlsson in the first period, huge. Just to have him wake up a little bit, have the power play gain some momentum and gain some mojo. If, again, like I mentioned with Tristan Jarry over this upcoming breaking into the trip, if we come back from the trip and we go, he was a perfect this, doing this, and this, we kind of forget all about it. If the power play can all of a sudden take their momentum that they gained from scoring that first one and then that second one on the 5-on-3, but they felt the mojo kind of start to kick a little bit, the momentum start to ride in their favor, if they can start rolling that into some more goals, and that can roll into some more wins, you know, we remember this happened, but we kind of forget that it really held them back. The power play, we've already seen, can be a game-changing situation. Mm-hmm. Penguins have already had a handful of games where it's impossible to get consistent 5-on-5 play because the refs are being whistle happy, and sometimes that's perfectly fine. It's still the early parts of the season where they are making a ton of calls, where they're calling it really tight. The Penguins have to take advantage of that. That's a big issue here, is that they're not fully embracing and taking advantage of those opportunities. Did things seem to be pushed in the right direction against Anaheim? Absolutely. Yep. They scored twice. That's a big positive. If it had the, let's say they just kind of lost on a last second goal. It wasn't a 5-on-3 situation. It wasn't a power play situation. They just kind of lost on a freak last second goal. We're not having the power play discussion. We're saying it looked a lot better. They scored twice. Mm-hmm. They scored on a huge 5-on-3. They were gaining momentum. Maybe Riley Smith is the answer or the key or whatever you want to discuss with the power play. But we're not having this discussion of, well, you fumbled the bag because of what have you done for me lately? Oh, yeah, one bad pass because you were overpassing a little bit more. Again, Mike Sullivan was not happy with the power play during a practice at PPG Paints Arena last week. Mm-hmm. You can verbally hear him yelling at them. I believe an expletive was used, and something about passing the puck into the net. Now, like we said, the power play did shoot a little more this time around. They did score twice. But that pass-happy feeling got to them on that last one. Mm-hmm. Again, not that they weren't taking shots on that opportunity. They were.
Yeah.
But it was just that one. And I can see why people are upset with the power play, because that one. But it looks better. I think overall, it looks better, but it's now a matter of finishing.
Yeah, here's one last thing I want to mention on the power play. They got lulled into a sense of security on that 5-on-3. You could tell.
Yes.
Because one, I don't know what it was the one time Karlsson and Malkin passed the puck back and forth to each other like 8 times in a row. I don't know why. I don't know what that was supposed to do. But that was just interesting. I don't think that did any good or it got them any closer to scoring a goal. But the other thing was, you see these players that are ultra talented and they think, hey, we can make these plays, you know, in our sleep. And there are times where, listen, the rotation that they have up top is really good and it makes them hard to defend. And that 5-on-3, when you're saying, okay, it's 5-on-3, they're going to say and play conservative. They're going to stay back, try to make sure there's no open lanes down low. Adam Henrique is a veteran in this league. Adam Henrique is a smart player in this league. He's not the most talented, but he's played so many games. Why? Because he thinks the game at a higher level. The Penguins scored both of their goals from the exact same spot that that puck was intercepted at. You think Adam Henrique didn't know, hey, this is where they're going to try to score the goal. This is what they're trying to do. They're trying to set up Evgeny Malkin there. So the second that puck gets on Erik Karlsson's stick, Adam Henrique knows, okay, with 1 second left on the power play, or the 5-on-3, I know Mason's coming out of the box, and I know that there's a more than 50% chance Karlsson tries to make this pass to Evgeny Malkin. He takes a couple steps forward. He picks off the pass because it's exactly what Erik Karlsson does, and he springs Mason McTavish. That's just getting lulled into a sense of security if you're the Penguins, and you can't do that when you are playing teams that have wily veteran penalty killers like Adam Henrique, who saw, listen, Karlsson's goal, Malkin's goal, came from that exact same play. So yeah, the Penguins are trying to go back to the well for a third time to win the game. Henrique knew what was coming. He read the play, he made the play, and the Ducks get to walk away with their fourth straight victory and 2 points at PPG Paints Arena. So overall, power play's fine. I don't know why people are mad about the power play. That's a bad mistake. There's a couple things they still need to fix. Getting better net front presences and not getting lulled into a sense of security there in a 5-on-3. But at the end of the day, it's not on the power play that they lost that game. It's on the guy we talked about for 20 minutes in the first segment. I don't have to go back to it. I talked about it for 22 minutes. My post-game show was 22 minutes, and that was all bashing on Tristan Jarry. So we don't need to keep going with that, but at the end of the day, I think the power play is heading in the right direction, trending in the right direction. So, and last night was certainly a case of that.
While you were bashing Tristan Jarry in your post game, I was Googling Macklin Celebrini to just kind of get a feel for how he's going to be. For those that don't know the name, that is reportedly going to be the next number one overall pick at the NHL draft. So that's the mindset that
you're in.
That we are all kind of feeling out the process of, so what would a number one overall pick look like in Pittsburgh again?
I mean, it's not out of the question. The Pittsburgh Penguins at the end of October, which is the first pseudo full month of the season, dead last in the Eastern Conference. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about them reaching a break in the season, and we'll finish this show off after this quick break. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com. The Penguins, they've reached a little break in the season because they now have a four-day rest before their next game on Saturday night, which kicks off their California road trip. They leave October with a 3-6-0 record. Like I mentioned before the break, that is dead last in the Eastern Conference. And according to Wes Crosby of NHL.com, it is the lowest point total, 6 standings points, the lowest point total through 9 games since the 2005-2006 season when Sidney Patrick Crosby was a rookie. Leo Carlson, who played in last night's game, was 9 months old. That's the last time the Penguins have gotten off to this slow of a start, and they were 0-4-5 to start that season, 3-6-0 to start this one. So if there's anything to take away from it, it's at least they have the wins and they're not just getting all pity points.
And actually, the funny part is about the start of that season is it didn't. That's just the first 9 games. That trend continued until game 10. Oh, yeah. Game 10, when they finally won 7-5 over the Atlanta Thrashers. This is ugly. Ugh. Mm-hmm. This is the situation we're in, man. And the funny thing is, like, none of those were wins. All those points from before.
Yeah. At least they got 3 wins in this one, and you know, one of them was a very impressive win over the Colorado Avalanche, which kind of clouds everybody's judgment of saying this team could be the worst team in the National Hockey League. Everybody says, well, I mean, you have the talent and you just went out and beat the Avalanche 4 days ago soundly. So the question then becomes, do you still believe that this is a playoff caliber team that you're watching on the ice?
As I was scrolling Twitter in between the during that little break there, I did see a couple of things. That one of them was that this team can still do it. There are certain things that do need to be tweaked and changed. Mm-hmm. And who knows if they're coming, who knows what it might take. But certain things about this team are pretty solid. We just discussed the power play. We discussed how people aren't happy with it, but it is getting there. It is genuinely getting there. They're taking their chances. They're shooting the puck. Eric Carlson said last week at some point that they just need to, someone needs to take charge. Someone needs to just, you know, be the quarterback almost. It seems like they're kind of getting there. Listen, you never bet against Sidney Crosby. That first line is doing pretty good, like I mentioned. 12 shots on goal, a career high. Jake Guentzel's a little snake bitten. Yikes. But his numbers otherwise look pretty good. I mean, he was...
Yeah.
He hits 6 points through three games. It was 5 assists, but hey, you have 6 points. It's, well, if you're finding a new level to your game and the other one starts waking up a little, that's going to make you a really dangerous player.
Yeah. The other thing with Guentzel, too, is I don't think they're putting him in position to score goals, especially on the power play. I don't think they're putting, and part of that is, you know, he's supposed to be the net front guy. Maybe he should stay in the net front a little bit more, but I don't think he's in position to really utilize his shot enough in most instances for the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I don't, if that's my gut feeling, if I go back and watch it, I might say the different thing, but I think especially on the power play, they're not putting him in positions to be the finisher for that team. And part of me is a little confused as to why, because he's been their leading scorer, I think, 3 of the past 5 years. So I don't know. I think that that's part of it, but not obviously all of it, because in the past he's been able to get his in the same situation or similar situations.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got 32 shots on goal so far this year. I mean, having that amount through 9 games is a pretty big number. Sidney Crosby is 39 through 9 games, in case you were curious. It doesn't fall... I feel like this is another situation where the downfalls are not falling on the main guys. Sidney Crosby's leading the team in points already. Or, sorry, second in the team in points already. He's gotten 10 points through 9 games. Evgeny Malkin had that monstrous first week and has still looked pretty consistent since then. Like we said, Jake Guentzel has 9 points. Yeah, only 2 of them are goals, but 9 points, and he is rifling the puck with those 32 shots. Brian Rust is waking up. We needed that. Mm-hmm. Riley Smith has that great chemistry with Evgeny Malkin already. We're still waiting on Ricard Raquel to, you know, not hit the snooze button.
Maybe if you put him on the first line, but I digress.
Hey, you're struggling. Here's a promotion. We'll see. And the third line's starting to wake up a little bit. The defense hasn't been totally god-awful. I mean, stop putting Letang and, like you said, stop putting Letang and Carlson out there at the same time, because that is a defensive nightmare. You'll get some goals, maybe, but you better hope it doesn't leave the zone. And if Eric Carlson can also start waking up, you know, more. He's played pretty well. The defensive part of his game, every game, I'm like, he is a genuinely good defenseman. There are times where it's obvious that he's not, but there are a lot of moments where it's the way he can A, turn defense into offense, and B, actually make some good stick plays. He's solid enough, especially if he's playing with Marcus Patterson, who's a great defenseman.
That's what I was about to say. It helps that he's playing with the best Penguins defenseman. It helps that he's playing with Marcus Patterson, because if he wasn't playing with Marcus Patterson, I think it'd be a little bit more obvious that Eric Carlson does struggle in his own zone. But I will defer to the fact that he's looked better than I expected.
I also think losing John Ludvig might be a little bit more of a... That might be bigger than we think, because he was playing really well. He was playing a little bit like Mark Friedman before his injury occurred, so now we're stuck with Chad Ruedel again, who, don't get me wrong, is Chad Ruedel. But he's not really Chad Ruedel anymore.
His underlying numbers are really good. It's just sometimes he makes that mistake. You know, if you don't notice him, he's doing all the right things. But the one time, the couple times you do notice him, he's always doing the wrong thing, which gives a very negative perception on a player that overall is not as negative as people think he is.
Right. And for what it's worth, Ryan Shea has been unnoticeable. Good.
Yes. Yeah. Ryan Shea has just completely flown under the radar, which for what he's supposed to do, he's doing his job well. But, you know, we're all over the place after this one, but we have 4 days to kind of dissect everything. The last thing I would ask you here, before we go, because we do have a meeting. The last thing I want to ask
before we go,
how long do you think Kyle Dubas waits before making a major change? A lot of people have asked me this on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. A lot of people asked me this in the comment section last night on the post-game show. How long do you think Kyle Dubas will wait? And if you think he makes one, what do you think that change ends up being?
I bet he doesn't wait long. I don't know what kind of change it would be, though, because you have to... I mean, listen, one move isn't going to change the team. It isn't going to immediately improve it and make it an all-star team. It's really hard to pick what it could be. We're stuck with Jeff Carter. There's nothing you could do about that. Because notice, I just ran down all the good things of the team. What did I not notice? What did I not pick out? The fourth line and the goaltending. The goaltending we can get to in a minute. But the fourth line, if you change your fourth line, that's what gets you going, you have bigger issues. You have bigger issues if the fourth line changing is what gets you. Jeff Carter's not going anywhere, though, so forget that. Olachary's his boy. That's Kyle Dubas' boy. Signed him for 3 years with a modified no trade. I don't think he's going to get taken out anytime soon. And Matt Nieto, maybe something can happen there, but that's also a two-year deal. I always feel like the guys that you just signed, you just brought on, are going to get a bit of a longer leash because they're new. So it sounds like the entire fourth line is sticking around for a little bit more. Don't know what else to say about that, at least in my head. Maybe... you've really got to have a talk with Jeff Carter, man. But I think that's a big one. But also, for what it's worth, he didn't have a bad game. There was a couple moments where I was like, hey, he looks fast at one point. The big new scoreboard at PPG Paints Arena will sometimes show speeds and how fast everyone is skating. There was a point I looked up and went, huh, Jeff Carter has the fastest skating speed of the night so far. And I saw it and I went, you know what? Yes, he does. So there's still some sort of thing there to keep Jeff Carter in the lineup. Other than that, I mentioned the top three lines are solid. They're fine. They're doing good. The fourth line isn't, but you're not going to change any of that. The defense looks good.
Well,
the power play is waking up, and here we are back at the Tristan Jarry conundrum.
Yeah, Tristan Jarry is obviously the biggest change that would need to be made. But again, similar to Jeff Carter, it's going to be hard for them, if not impossible, for them to make an actual move in that area. But with Jeff Carter, here's the thing. Look what happened when you took Jansen Harkins off the third line and put in Radim Zahorna. Now, you have to introduce the right piece, but exchanging one piece could change the entire outlook of an entire line. Jeff Carter can't be sent down. Jeff Carter can't be traded unless he... not request a trade, but allows a trade to happen. Doesn't mean you can't put him in the press box, at least for a game. See what happens when you put Vinny Hinostroza there, because Vinny Hinostroza is on the NHL roster right now. Salary cap compliant and everything, with $16,000 to spare. Vinny Hinostroza is on the roster. Now, I understand it's Mike Sullivan's boy, but Mike Sullivan has to realize that his seat warmer just got turned on a little bit. Now, here's the thing. I don't think that Kyle Dubas is going to make any changes leading up to this road trip. There were some rumors that he would. Those rumors were all very not based in fact. There's not going to be any changes leading up to this road trip in the four-day break. If the Penguins go even 1-2 on this road trip, that puts them at 4-8 on the season, whether they get a pity point or not. 4 wins, 8 losses. On the Western California road trip is not an easy one. 1-2 is a realistic response, whether you're playing well or not. Right? The LA Kings are great. The Ducks just beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Sharks stink. You should get a win over the Sharks. But
and I was going to say, you bet if that is one of your losses, then you really do need to look at the rest of the league standings and go, oh, goodness gracious.
Exactly.
So.
But if they come home 4-8, I think Kyle Dubas is probably already making phone calls and trying to figure out how he can fix this team. If they come home 4-8, that expedites the process a whole lot. They need to have a winning road trip to save a lot of people's butts down on the ice there at PPG Paints Arena. Now, here's the thing of what the move would be. I still find it very hard to believe that Mike Sullivan's going anywhere, at least in the near future. But his support staff is on the chopping block. You know, goaltending coach, we've seen that change midseason. Assistant coaches, we've seen that change. Both assistant coaches, honestly, could be on it because they're in their final year of their contract and they're not going to care. They're going to be like, all right, you're gone. But here's the thing. It's not just getting rid of them to wake Mike Sullivan up and say, hey, you have a new support staff. It's people that are directly hired by Kyle Dubas. But here's the other thing. I could see Kyle Dubas bringing in somebody that eventually could supplant Mike Sullivan, somebody with the pedigree that could eventually supplant Mike Sullivan to really heat things up for Sullivan, to really open his eyes to, hey, you need to change something. You need to get better. Not that I don't think that there's a healthy relationship there between Dubas and Sullivan, certainly healthier than it was between Hextall and Sullivan, but something to just kind of give him a jolt, because right now I don't believe they have that guy in the organization, right? The one person that you could really argue is Todd Reirden. You might even have an argument for Mike Vellucci, but you're going to see a lot of the same things. I don't think that that's the correct form of action. So if you're going to make a change, a major change, not just making a call up, I could see it being, hey, your assistant coaches are gone. We're bringing in this guy. And I think it's going to be known, not spoken, but known, that this guy is somebody that the second Mike Sullivan slips a little too far below the surface, he's going to get supplanted by this guy. Because I don't seem to believe that that's J.D. Forrest. He doesn't really have that Dan Bylsma, Mike Sullivan circa 2016 feel to him. So I could see Kyle Dubas saying, hey, we're bringing this guy in. And then it can go rather unspoken that if you don't perform well and your team doesn't perform well, this guy's going to be the next head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
You're right. And I totally see that. One of the issues is at this point, the season started, who's out there? Who's available?
That's a major question. The biggest coaching name on the market is somebody that Kyle Dubas actually fired in the past. So I don't see Mike Babcock coming to Pittsburgh anytime soon. Certainly not as an assistant. Not in the situation that I outlined. No.
And considering how things ended before they started in Columbus, I don't see him getting a job ever again in the NHL. So there's that. I was also chatting with Brian Metzer after the game. I ran into him on the way out of the arena. Friend of the show, Brian Metzer, I should say. Mm-hmm. We both know Mike Sullivan's not going anywhere. Where he's not. That new contract, I will continue to pound the table on this. I will not actually pound the table because that's where my microphone is sitting.
Thank you.
But I will continue to pound the table and say his contract has not started yet. Wait until next year with this. Is this he getting warm? Sure. But once that contract starts, then you can really start having the discussion of, okay, things aren't changing. Maybe he's a little comfortable in his spot. Sometimes a warm seat is comfy. And you know what I mean? I don't know if that really helps anything, but sometimes that warm seat is comfortable to sit in. He has a comfortable spot and a very cushy position in this organization. He got that contract signed 2 years in advance. And apparently it was just FSG's idea. Kyle Dubas probably does also really like Mike Sullivan as a head coach. Maybe it helps that Sullivan was quote-unquote part of the hiring process. Don't know exactly to what extent. But again, if you're Mike Sullivan, we don't know exactly to what extent he was in that hiring process. But if he was at all involved, well, Kyle Dubas, man, he hired me. I know he's below me, but he hired me. Or Mike Sullivan. I'm hiring the guy that might fire me? No, I'm going to hire the guy that's going to keep me around. Mike Sullivan might be in a bit of a comfortable position. And I like your idea of making him uncomfortable somehow. Forcing that change. Make that with the lineup as well. Make someone uncomfortable. Don't know how you do that. P.O. Joseph's still sitting around doing nothing. Could he be on the chopping block?
I don't think that moves the needle enough.
No, it doesn't, because considering he's a healthy scratch. But
yeah,
where do we go from here? And we're starting to get to that point of the season, and it's still October for a couple more hours.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
I don't know. Something tells me that my steadfast belief that Mike Sullivan's not going anywhere because of his contract is starting to whittle away. Because at the end of the day, FSG made that hire early on in their ownership of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they admitted several times early on in their ownership of the Pittsburgh Penguins that they're not too invested in understanding NHL and the way the NHL business works. They rely on other people to do so. So they might like Mike Sullivan as the person, but quickly they're going to understand that Mike Sullivan, the coach, if he's not producing, is going to cost them money. And at the end of the day, that is a money-making organization. The entire league is, but certainly FSG is. So I'm not saying that he's on the chopping block. I'm not saying that he's on the hot seat, but I'm saying that the fact that, hey, you know, his contract hasn't started, I don't think that's as big of a factor going forward as I used to. But we'll see how attendance has been down too.
Attendance has slipped every game since the opener as well. So when you go back to the money thing, in a gate-driven league, we get that FSG makes a ton of money. We get that the Penguins make a ton of money, allegedly. The attendance is down. The visuals of empty seats is on the rise. So something will give there, surely, hopefully. For what it's worth, the new scoreboard is a treat to see. The new lights don't make that much of a difference, I guess. Whatever. And for what it's worth, home games are still fun to go to. They are still fun atmospheres. But the product on the ice, the reason why you paid that much money because ticket prices are also going up, is not good. So,
no.
Something's got to give there. Someone's got to wake up and make the moves. Like I said, Mike Sullivan hinted at moves. We'll see if something happens. Practice is at 12 today, and then a day off, and then to California.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening with that. I think this is an actually pivotal road trip for the Pittsburgh Penguins when it comes to the direction of their season and what they end up doing when it comes to the personnel on the ice. I think Kyle Dubas is taking this one a little bit more seriously than he took that home game four-game homestand, especially considering you lose three of those four games. And at the end of it, it's worrisome because the team on the ice, for the most part, looks good, but they can't get wins. And at the end of the day, it is a wins-driven business and is in a gate-driven league. So we are going to be back later in this week, but thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will see you guys next time.